2039. Mark, you want to explain what we are looking at?
Chairman Hill, this bill, House Bill 2039, adopts the Uniform Electronics Transactions Act, defines relevant terminology, requires that the electronic records and electronic contracts and electronic signatures take legal effect, designates rules for displaying and communicating electronic records as other laws should prescribe, maintains that an electronic record or electronic signature can only be attributed to its creator and take effect by proper validation procedures at the time of creation, provides rules to parties affected by changes or errors to electronic records during transmission, establishes retention guidelines for certain electronic records, and allows governmental agencies to introduce additional retention requirements, requires that automated transaction contracts be formed by either electronic agents to the parties or by an electronic agent and an individual, demonstrates that whoever owns or asserts control of an authoritative copy of an electronic report is liable for any changes or transfers of control the report may undergo, and lastly, authorizes the Director of the Oregon Department of Administrative Services to regulate governmental agencies' ability to create, process, and communicate electronic records and electronic signatures. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Let's bring up Marty Sasson. Welcome. Vince, welcome. Whomever first.
Chairman Representative Hill, my name is Marty Lynn Sasson. I'm an attorney in the Law Department. With me is Vince, excuse me, in the Law Department with Tektronix, Inc. With me is Vince Chiapetta. I'll allow him to introduce himself.
Hi, I'm Vince Chiapetta, and I'm a professor at Willamette University College of Law.
Chairman Representative Hill, we're here at your request, representing the Oregon State Bar Computer and Electronic Information Work Group. We also submitted some written materials for your review. In particular, you requested that we provide the subcommittee with information regarding House Bill 2039, and you specifically asked us to address whether this legislation will impact Oregon's competitive advantage in the commercial market. Before we address that issue specifically, I would like to provide the subcommittee with some backdrop information. I'm sure you're aware that the Electronic Signatures and Global and National Commerce Act e-sign was effective in October 1, 2000. E-sign basically provides a national rule that a signature contract or record cannot be denied legal effect merely because it is in electronic form. E-sign currently is the rule of law. Under e-sign, the federal law has allowed states to basically regulate their own electronic commerce in two specific ways. The first way that you would be able to supersede the federal law would be to adopt the Uniform Electronic Transaction Act as approved by the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws. The second alternative for superseding Section 1 of e-sign would be to adopt state laws that are consistent with e-sign, are technologically neutral, in other words, they do not prefer any particular technology, and specifically reference e-sign. With respect to House Bill 2039, you've asked us as to whether or not adoption of that law would create any kind of a competitive advantage for Oregon. The work group would like to provide you with information regarding, that's okay.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I'm very sorry.
The work group would like to present to you some information regarding the potential impact House Bill 2039 could have upon Oregon's competitive advantage. We'd like to indicate that looking at a competitive advantage is really a balancing of the risks of what type of law you decide to adopt. For example, if the legislature would like to supersede the federal law, e-sign, The safest and least risky way to do that would be to adopt the Uniform Act, the approved act, UEDA. What that means is that the state would need to adopt the Uniform Act and all in any approved provisions with the least amount of modification as possible. If the Uniform Act were modified in any manner, it would raise questions as to whether or not you had adopted the approved act, and then the question would be raised as to whether or not it superseded the federal law. In terms of a competitive advantage in the market, one way to achieve a competitive advantage might be to create predictability in the market. Adopting the approved version of UEDA would allow for a definite degree of predictability. Consistency and predictability in the laws creates an atmosphere in which commercial transactions can be conducted with a degree of certainty. That probably always lends itself to some competitive advantage. The advantage of UEDA is, there's probably an additional advantage to UEDA, and that is that it's a uniform law. So it is also a law that's being adopted by many other states. I believe as of August 22 states had adopted UEDA. I think it shouldn't be, we also wanted to provide you with information that there, to a certain extent, the state may want to look at other things that provide a competitive advantage in terms of adding provisions to UEDA, keeping in mind that any provisions that are added to UEDA raise the question of whether Section 101 of eSign has, in effect, been superseded. But there are provisions in UEDA, there are provisions that the state may want to look at that would provide it with a competitive advantage that are not in UEDA. Some examples might be additional provisions regarding digital signatures. It's obvious, too, that UEDA does not contain the same kind of consumer protections that eSign has. All of those to add to UEDA may, in fact, increase the risk that the federal law would not be seen as superseded, but on the other hand, it also might create incentives for businesses to do business in Oregon. I'd like to point out the other element that the work group would like us to mention today, and that does deal with consumer protection under eSign. Currently, eSign provides extensive guidelines and requirements for disclosure and notices in consumer transactions. These sections are found in Section 101 of eSign. If the state were to adopt the uniform approved UEDA, Section 101 would be superseded. There are questions then as to whether or not the adopted form of UEDA would in fact contain, whether consumer protections would then apply to Oregon. That's a question the legislature might want to address in terms of, does it want to add to the provisions in UEDA?
This is Vince Giappetta. I guess I would add only a couple of other thoughts. One in particular is that we already have an electronic signature and digital signature statute on the Oregon books, and to the extent there is continuing possibility of conflict between eSign and those statutes, it's probably equally important to get certainty by addressing that issue. There are obviously a number of ways that can be done, but in addition to the question about adopting UEDA, we ought to make sure that we're absolutely clear what the law in Oregon actually is at this point. So I would recommend that we go back and look at the existing statutes. The only other point I guess I would make is really to reemphasize what Ms. Sathoff was saying, which is I think that the critical contest that has been set up under eSign by the federal government is to give a state a way to adopt its own statute, which is very clear and very certain under eSign itself, that there will be no preemption problems if, in fact, you adopt the uniform version of the Uniform Electronic Transactions Act. As soon as you make changes, it then opens up the question and leaves the room for people to engage in dispute, which undermines, obviously, certainty and predictability. And so we've been put, really, to the trade-off by the federal legislation of the question of, is our major goal predictability and certainty, and we'll take whatever extra we can get out of UEDA with regard to evidentiary matters, with regard to a mistake in attribution, or are there other things that are more important to us than pure predictability and certainty, and therefore we'd like to make sure we add those provisions back in. And that then just becomes a risk question as to whether or not those additions merit taking the risk. And I guess as a final point related to that, I do think that it leads you to be very circumspect in simply changing the language in the statute just for change's sake. And obviously anybody looking at language can say to themselves, I would not have written this particular way. And so I want to change the following three words in UEDA. Unless there's a real reason to be doing that, there's a downside that we now are at least subject to attack on not having adopted the Uniform Act. In addition, we lose the benefit of the uniformity, because to the extent another state would actually interpret that same Uniform Act, we now have a baseline without needing an Oregon case in order to say what, in fact, our statute says. So I would leave it at that, unless, Marty, you have anything else to say.
I just wanted to underscore that the current Electronic Signature Act in Oregon, while it appears to have some similarities with both eSign and UEDA, one is not UEDA, so it does not comply with the first exemption under eSign and how to get out of eSign. And it doesn't, there are three requisites for the second exemption under eSign, and that is that the law be consistent with eSign. We may be able to argue that, but two, that it be technologically neutral. Again, it raises an argument because it appears or it may prefer digital signatures. It raises the argument as to whether or not that is a technologically neutral statute, and it clearly doesn't at this time reference eSign. So it doesn't meet either of the potential exemptions. I think Mr. Chip has said it, but I'd like to say it again. It simply raises the question of how does that interact with eSign. I'd also add to that, if House Bill 2039 is adopted, the question is still there as to how now does House Bill 2039 interact or interplay with the current Electronic Signature Act. Thank you.
Thank you. That's one of my fundamental questions, in terms of we don't have two provisions in law that, and I, since your comments, I'm assuming you're volunteering to try to help us figure this out. So in terms of, just so everybody knows, this is not going to move out today. We've got a lot of issues that we need to, I think, figure out how this meshes together so that we do it the right way. So in terms of, and so I think in terms of, I think we're going to go to a work group with the certified smart people on this, so we understand what we're getting and what we're giving up. In terms of, if we just do nothing, we get eSign, and we may want to have a discussion about that. Representative Lowe, we do have a copy of the federal legislation, which we will get copies to all the committee members, so that we understand what the base legislation is that we're talking about driving all of this. And so I think if we can clearly sort of come up with a matrix and we understand what our choices are, it'll help us go forward. And then where I want to sort of draw the line in this committee is stay more to the issues of implementation of digital signatures, because this is then going to go to the Judiciary Committee and let them worry about the implementation in terms of in the context of the law. So that makes sense? I don't know where that line is, but...
Well, since I sit on the Judiciary, all I can say is thanks a lot, Jim.
So, but, I'm more than happy to clean it up here and let them, rubber stamp it, or if we do the right thing and Representative Williams buys off on it, then we might be able to send it out of here. We just need to try to do the best. I just want to try to figure out, give us a mission of what we're going to try to accomplish here.
Chairman, Representative Hill, Representative Lowe, I wanted to mention, I believe I've been authorized by the work group to at least indicate that, to let you know that we are continuing as a work group to look at UEDA, and the work group is also looking at UCEDA.
Okay. Any questions, Richard?
I wish I was versed enough to ask a question, but it seems to me like you've covered it pretty well. I want to thank you for your continued work on this, and let you know that my door is open. I appreciate the opportunity to come to a fuller understanding of these things, because I won't snow you. I'm not real sure about how these things interconnect.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pat Lundin?
Gotta be careful, though, with federal preemption.
Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Hill, Representative Lowe, I'm Pat Lundin from the Department of Administrative Services Information Resource Management Division. I'm the Electronic Commerce Manager. I'm here testifying today for the Department of Administrative Services, but I'm also representing all the state agencies who have a stake in the certainty that this Bill 2039 will bring to state government. What we're requesting is that this committee pass House Bill 2039 with some pending amendments, and I'll get to that shortly. The issue we have right now is that there is no uniform commercial code that recognizes electronic commerce in all 50 states, and that's where we are trying to get. What the bill that we have reviewed here does is it recognizes electronic transactions as valid both for private business as well as for government. It prescribes standards for the electronic transactions, and it is based on a model law that's already been adopted by more than 20 states. Provides specific direction to government electronic transactions that really are otherwise absent in the federal e-sign legislation. I think the lawyers have not been able to agree whether government transactions are excluded from e-sign or not. I think it also strengthens the original intent of the Oregon Digital Signature legislation. It's also written to be complementary to our existing state laws while also providing uniform transaction standards. How the bill will affect current law is the question of whether the original Oregon Digital Signature Law, ORS 192.850, would be preempted. Again, the lawyers have not been able to agree on that preemption. It also will change the current law by creating uniform standards for electronic transactions. The discussion portion, I'd like to say, is that there is confusion about e-sign, and the absence of a government-specific version of e-sign are both, I think, good reasons to pass this bill. Certainly having uniform standards saves the state from rewriting really thousands of statutes that contain language that may be barriers to expansion of e-government if it requires a written signature or paper form. This legislation would supersede all those statutes. As with other uniform laws, because of a potential conflict between the uniform law and existing statute, the Department of Justice has advised all state agencies to review their existing statutes for unintended consequences once they've understood that what the uniform law contains. Now for the discussion about the amendments, the bar has been working for the last several months trying to give us advice on how to make this meet the requirements of e-sign and how to meet the intent of the governor. The problem is that Section 12 of the model bill defines government agency to include federal government, judicial branch, constitutional offices, state agencies, cities, and counties. That's a section of UIDA that is not to be touched. In the sections that are optional, which are Section 17 and 18, you are allowed to decide whether a government entity has the authority to decide which business processes to make electronically available and to set standards for how that technology be implemented. Our first attempt, as the way the bill is written, where the Department of Administrative Services sets the standards for how the technology be implemented so we have a uniform approach, implies that we would have authority over the governmental entities, federal government, judicial branch, constitutional offices, and that is where the difficulty comes. We have scheduled, DAS has, meeting with our Department of Justice attorney and Ledge Counsel for Friday this week, February 2nd, to put our amendments and to particularly retain the body of UIDA the way it's written and add a section at the end that defines government agencies the way we want and give the Department of Administrative Services authority over those government entities. And that's where we'll be hammering out what's reasonable. We certainly feel that the governor intends the Department of Administrative Services will have authority over the executive branch agencies, possibly the constitutional office of Secretary of State and Treasury, certainly probably not federal agencies, judicial branch. I don't know about cities and counties. So the lawyers will be helping us decide that, and I think we can fairly quickly bring those amendments after Friday. I believe that's all I had to say.
Any questions?
No. I do understand those issues. Thanks. Appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Pat.
Very helpful.
And as we go through this, if people have any suggested amendments, just everybody see Mark, and we'll get them drafted. I think that the best way is let's get LC amendments as we go through this. It'll be easier for us to sort out this process rather than trying to us trying to figure it out with non-LC amendments. So, thank you. Jim Craven. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lowe, for the record, Jim Craven, representing the American Electronics Association. The AEA is the nation's largest high-tech trade association, and we have about 3,500 member companies across the country and about 150 member companies in Oregon. AEA supports adoption of UEDA at the state level. We also participated, along with Senator Wyden and others, in the e-sign debate last year and last summer. But we do agree with all the I'm in favor of the bill, but I'm not certifiably smart on the bill. But you have plenty of those people here in the room today. And I think what you're hearing and the conversations I've had is that this is probably not an issue of great, you know, sides where people are fighting each other. At least there may be, but I haven't heard that yet. But there is some work that needs to be done. And I certainly appreciate the work the Oregon State Bar has done to date and bringing a lot of parties to the table over the last couple of months to get where we are today. We're not done yet. We're not clearly there. But certainly the Department of Justice and DAS and other folks appear to be communicating and wrestling with some, you know, fairly substantial and somewhat difficult choices to be made here. But I think what you are hearing is that the best choice is probably for states to adopt UEDA, not just default to the e-sign federal legislation. That is a choice. But I think the choice of moving forward, because there are substantial additional benefits to electronic commerce from adopting UEDA. So our position is in favor. We're not going to be drafting the amendments. I think people behind me will be doing that. And I appreciate the committee bringing this forward to at least this hearing early in the session so we can continue to work on it and get it done before we get out of here. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. So what the big problems, as I understand it, is to get over some of the separation of powers issues that would preclude centralized oversight over, I'll say, the judicial branch. And
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, I think the issues, if you're referring to the ones that Pat Lundeen just brought forward, yes.
And that of Pat.
Part of that is a policy choice. Part of it is just, I think, a drafting. The way the bill's drafted specifically right now in Section 17 is probably incorrect, so that needs to be fixed. The other, I thought you were talking about the true significant separation of powers issues between the federal and state government.
Okay,
but Congress has already dealt with that one. So unless we want to take on Senator Wyden and others, I guess that one's behind us.
If I may proceed informally, thank you. You alluded to some opposition. I guess I'm trying to ferret out from you what that might be.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lowe, I was characterizing that I did not think there was opposition, but I said that it's been brought to my attention to date. I can't speak for everyone sitting behind me here in the room, and it'll be up to, if there is opposition, it'll be up to them to raise those issues.
Chicken. I'm sorry.
Nobody's peeped yet. So.
No, I noticed that. I was just wondering what it was. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you. Matt Farmer.
Okay. Representative Hill, Chairman Hill, Representative Lowe, Matt Farmer, I'm Associate General Counsel for the Oregon Association of Realtors. I submitted some written testimony. I just wanted to lend our support to this legislation and let you know that it's important to our industry. We supported eSign federally. We think UEDA is a good way to handle the problems associated with electronic transactions. We favor certainty. We haven't heard of any amendments that would affect our industry, and therefore I wanted to let you know that this is important to us, and we do support the legislation. I think sometimes we lose track of how difficult it can be when you change transaction forms. In our industry, we've struggled with the legality of faxing transaction documents for a number of years. Now the industry is on the verge of completely electronic transactions. We see House Bill 2039 as a way to avoid some of those issues over evidentiary problems with records and attribution of signatures and so on, and therefore we fully support this legislation.
No, thank you.
Matt, hold on. What is the cost? Have you guys been any estimate of the cost and the data retention requirements of this? So you know, from the private sector, in terms of what's it going to cost to retain these electronic documents?
We have not looked into the cost. One of the things that we have done and will be in front of the legislature this term is allow real estate records in general to be kept electronically rather than in paper. And so we did that because we believe there'll be a savings in that regard. And I think that savings would translate here as well.
So that may be a place where you can get a figure. It just sort of is, we talk about this in the context of helping a transaction, but there's this other little thing called data retention, and that yeah. can in balloon for a small organization or realtors.
You're quite right, Chairman Hill. Record retention is a big issue for small realtor offices. Right now, record retention is files of paper, and our larger offices are telling us they'd much rather keep them electronically. So we would look for savings there. As far as the smaller offices, I don't know that there are very many realtors left in the state who do not use computers. It would be a tiny fraction at this point.
I guess it's the volatility where. You at least have time, you know, to stamp out the fire in a box of paper, you know, versus, you know, whatever form this is going to be stored in, you know, you step on it, you break it, you know, a magnet sits on top of it or whatever it is, you know, because I don't see any construct here for any third-party data retention, and that may be an offshoot of this, but in terms of, and I don't know if, underlying all this is some expectation that somebody else will going to do that versus, you know, you've got a, you know, PC sitting over in the corner and that's your data retention and sitting on the hard drive fails, then what?
Yeah.
You know, when somebody comes back and says, I need these a copy of this document. That's what I'm sort of saying in terms of what ultimately would be the cost of this, because this is only one small piece of it, and then it's sort of, you know, from a legislative standpoint, I think we need to start looking at the form that this is being retained in such a way that we have some surety that it really will be retained, sort of beyond the good intentions.
You're right, Mr. Chairman, and I'm encouraged because as I was listening to Jim's testimony and now yours, the thought occurred to me, what about catastrophic sunspots and so forth that could wipe out these records? What is there a redundancy system, and where might these things be stored in the event of that? How would you reconstruct the records of a real estate transfer? How would anybody do a title search?
I think as far as title is concerned, we're not ready to move with that yet. It's the actual formation of the contract, the sale agreement. I am sitting on a task force for the National Association of Realtors, and we will meet on February 15th in Chicago. Let me bring these issues to their attention, and I may well be able to report to you some data, even possibly nationally. We have not looked at it in a dollar cents way, but I think those points are very well taken.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, will we be having testimony from somebody who, some of the certified smart folks in here who can explain for us gently and kindly what some of the storage problems might be, things that we've not thought about? Is that somebody coming up? Or would that be you?
We can ask to find that.
Yes, no, I wouldn't feel comfortable on computer data storage techniques or costs.
Maybe we something to add to our list in terms of as we go through this.
Well, I think that's what I was getting at with my very cloudy question to Jim Craven.
He's awake.
Just checking. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pete Shepard.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe. My name is Pete Shepard. I'm the Deputy Attorney General. I have your staff is distributing to you a brief outline of our concerns, and briefly, I just want to get another issue on the committee's agenda and suggest to the committee that we'll submit some proposed amendments to to Mr. Jolly early next week, if that suits the committee's favor. In brief, we do have a concern that it's possible that House Bill 2039, if not amended in some form, could be interpreted to override some kinds of consumer protection statutes that presently exist under Oregon law. Under the Federal Act, for example, notices concerning the termination of a person's utilities service are expressly excluded from the scope of that act, so those would not be termination. Those matters couldn't be dealt with electronically under the Federal Act, at least. As it presently exists, House Bill 2039 doesn't speak to that question, so that gives rise to the issue of whether, in fact, those kinds of notices could be provided electronically at some point in the future. There may be other examples of that. Our suggestion for dealing with that would not be to modify the language of the Uniform Act in any way, but rather to graft onto the end of it a section or sections that incorporate from the federal law the kinds of protections that make the federal law acceptable to most folks and would be probably adequate in terms of consumer protection issues.
Very good. And we will look for the suggested amendments.
Very well, Mr.
Get them in the LC form.
Thank you.
Thank you. E.J. Smith?
Thank you, Chair Hill and members of the committee. I'm B.J. Smith. I'm the Public and Government Relations Director for Clackamas County, and I simply wanted to place on the record a concern that we have with Section 17, and that has previously been discussed by the Department of Administrative Services. It appears as if the policy under Section 17 is to, I think, very much broaden the state government oversight of local government decisions to create electronic records, how they would be stored, how they would be managed. Currently, of course, we have public records law that we comply with, but it does seem to me that the language in this section is much greater than the e-sign issue, and in fact could consume all of the local government decisions that we have on what information and transactions, non-commercial transactions that we have on our website. So that is a policy consideration. It is currently, many of us do have thousands of pages of information out on our websites to our citizens, and our decisions at the local level to do that are really based on technological capacity and our financing resources to make that available. So as you consider cost of implementation at the state, I would request that you also consider that Section 17 could have a financial impact on local governments, as well as basically changing a structural relationship between state government and local government. And I also am, I think, joined in this by the Association of Oregon Counties, as we have considered this law. I've been in contact with the Department of Administrative Services and hope that we can perhaps reconcile this issue in Section 17. Any questions, please?
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2039? Seeing none, gone. We do have some written testimony that we've gotten, and that members have it in their book and on the dais here. And if there's any additional comments anybody wants to, if you can get them to Mark, we'll make it part of the record. I think where I want to go with this is I'm going to try to drive a work group in terms of in Marty. If we get the bar to lead that process. Can you come up, please, for the record?
Representative, we were actually having a relevant discussion about the exemptions under UEDA. Could you ask me again the question?
If you could also leave yourself in for the record. I'm looking for the bar work group to lead our work group to drive this to conclusion.
My name is Marty Lernsathoff, for the record. I'm an attorney in the Law Department at Tektronix, Inc. I spoke earlier. Again, the work group has authorized me to indicate that we are continuing to work on UEDA, continuing to work on UCEDA, and the interplay between them as well. If I'm assuming that means that what Mr. Chiapetta and I did today, we would, if not us, other members of that group would come forward and provide information.
And if we can get you to sort of come and work with Mark, and we'll get amendments drafted, so we get a package that everybody can agree to, and then we'll deal with any amendments that people don't agree to. If we can try to, I'm thinking from a scheduling standpoint, if we could do this by the end of February.
I believe I would need to make sure that the work group would has volunteers would be willing to do that. Also, it's my understanding that the Department of Justice is working with some agencies on that. And I don't want to speak for them. I'm not sure of that. So,
and if they want to,
right.
I'm just anybody who's interested. If we can try to drive this to conclusion, so we can come up and present. So here's what everybody who was interested in and showed up at the meeting, you know, we agree that this is the way to do this. Specifically, looking back at Oregon's existing digital signature, and then we need to answer a technical question: is because of the relating clause, could we do anything? Could we actually repeal anything else since it's only relating to UEDA?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a technical issue. We may have to
think
about using a different vehicle
to
do everything in one vehicle. But we will ask Elsa that, and then so that we can sort of take these separate subjects and mesh them together, so we have a package. And let's try to keep UCEDA out of it as much as possible, since that will be our own can of worms.
Representative Chair Hill and Representative Lowe, I believe the work group is willing to provide information and help in the discussion process with respect to providing any legal interpretations or anything of that nature. We, of course, would not be appropriate for us to do that.
We've got our legislative council that will do that. I was just looking in terms of the certified smart people, how they think this all should mesh together, and legislative council will put it in the right form and tell us whether they like it or don't like it.
Okay.
Or whether we should or shouldn't, or whether it's constitutional or not constitutional.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Marty, can I ask you a question? You testified earlier that you would be extremely cautious about adding or changing anything so that there would be a perfect fit between what we adopt and what other states have adopted, and there would be no cause or open doors for litigation. And you also were present in the room when Pete Shepard from the AG's office testified that there is a section that we should add to the end of this
to add some clarity about jurisdictional issues and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Does that give you pause?
Chair, Representative Hill, Representative Lowe, I believe that what I hope that what I was trying to convey is that there are risks you take when you modify UEDA. There may be very good reasons for the legislature to take those risks. I think that the message we were trying to convey is that if and when you decide to modify UEDA, do it deliberately. Don't modify just for drafting style or for making it sound better. Make the conscious policy choice to modify. I think the work group has also agrees that, for example, adding consumer provisions, if you intend to do that, the best way would be to keep the UEDA provisions intact. I think that Mr. Shepherd indicated grafting on a section at the end. Anything you can do to keep the clarity of the provisions of UEDA. So,
or the in clarity of it together.
Mr. Chairman, I quite agree that there are certain notices to the citizenry, utility shut off being one of them, that really have to not be electronic.
Well, I guess, you know, if you're buying the service from the cell phone company, they're serving this electronically, and then they turn it off. And
so you're up the creek.
There you go.
No paddle.
Anyway.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
With that, then let's close the public hearing on House Bill 2039. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2470. Patrick, can come up and we'll just start from the top. Ready to open. Oh, yes. Mark, sorry. Introduce what we're talking about.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, House Bill 2470 reestablishes the Oregon Internet Commission and defines the commission's scope of interest as it relates to the progress of Oregon business, government, education, and economy. It specifies commission membership, directs commission to oversee the development of electronic commerce by monitoring the state agency electronic commerce strategies, ensuring steady and efficient growth of the internet commerce, and improving citizen access to information resources and technology. And lastly, allows the Economic and Community Development Department to acquire funding and staff to support the commission. Sunsets the commission on January 2nd of 2006. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Blum, my name is Patrick Allen. I'm the Economic and Community Development Department's regional officer serving Clackamas and Hood River counties. I also had the pleasure of serving with you, Mr. Chairman, on the Oregon Internet Commission as the department's representative. I'm here today to express to you and to the committee the department's support for the intent of House Bill 2470, creating a more permanent Oregon Internet Commission. As you know, the previous legislature created a very limited duration body and charged it with examining policies and making proposals to ensure that internet commerce will continue to grow and prosper while delivering social and economic benefits to Oregon's citizens, government, and business. Late last year, the Internet Commission completed its work and delivered a set of 53 overall recommendations ranging, as you heard last week, from the funding of engineering and technology programs to changes in tax policy and proposed legal structure changes. Included in the Commission's report was a recommendation to establish a permanent Oregon Internet Commission to provide ongoing advice and oversight in this area. We believe this kind of input, particularly from the private sector, would provide invaluable policymaking guidance and support the intent to institutionalize this role. As is currently drafted, House Bill 2470 calls for the recreated Oregon Internet Commission to be a semi-autonomous body with staffing provided by the department. As you'll see from the associated fiscal impact statement, this could be a relatively expensive approach. And the governor's budget even reduces further our ability to manage a large number of independent advisory bodies, We do believe that we can accomplish the intent of the bill at a lesser expense by incorporating the proposed advisory body into the larger system of advisory committees under the Economic and Community Development Commission. And, of course, if that's a change that you're interested in pursuing, we'd be happy to work with staff on wording. At this time, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions?
No, pretty straightforward.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Welcome.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Chairman Hill, Representative Lowe. For the record, my name is Pat Lundeen. I'm with the Department of Administrative Services, Information Resource Management Division, and I'm the Electronic Commerce Manager for the state. I'm here representing Department of Administrative Services on House Bill 2470. We certainly support the intent of the Oregon Internet Commission and have worked closely with it during its first session. The department has a concern on Section 1, 2A, and that is the language that says that the commission will oversee development of electronic commerce within Oregon and oversee any electronic commerce strategies developed by the state agencies. I think what we understand the intent of renewing the Oregon Internet Commission is to allow the private sector people to participate and review our strategies for electronic commerce and government and to provide advice to us. And we suggest language that says that the Oregon Internet Commission will review the electronic strategies and provide comments to state agencies and advice. And the exact wording, we'd be glad to work with you for that.
Any questions? Thank you.
Great.
Peter Bragdon?
Welcome. Good afternoon. My name is Peter Bragdon. I'm an attorney with Columbia Sportswear in Portland, and I was also a member of the Internet Commission. I just wanted to take a couple of minutes to lend my support for reestablishing a more permanent or a Internet Commission with a lengthier term. I hope the fact that someone from the garment business is here supporting the Internet Commission says something about the vast reach of the Internet and how it is touching really all of us in this state. And my company's been around since 1938, but like many other companies, we're really an example how we've all become Internet companies to some extent. I've got people stealing my intellectual property over the Internet. You can listen to our earnings release today on a webcast if you go home and look at our website tonight. And we've got viruses flying around the world that say www.columbia.com. But I point out that that's Columbia with an O. It's not actually our site, but we keep getting blamed for it by people who keep contacting me. Having sat on the commission and chaired one of the subcommittees, I'm proud of the report that we came up with, but the concern I have is that it rapidly becomes stale, particularly, I mean, I think that's always a risk, but particularly with something that's moving as fast. And we had that problem even during the course of our deliberations, and UIDA is a great example. When we were partway through the process, we thought we didn't have to write anything or look at UIDA. Then the federal government took action, and we kept having we probably rewrote that report three different times based on different action that was happening. And my guess is next session we'll be revisiting UIDA again when there are some interpretations that we may want to deal with. One thing I did want to stress about it is that it was the experience was one of the most positive governmental experiences I've had in the way people brought together a variety of different people to work on an issue in a very positive way. There were a lot of potential eco clashes involved when you have Microsoft and Intel and people from different branches of government, as well as Columbia Sportswear, sitting down together, of course, led by academics. But it ended up being a very positive experience. I think that alone is a reason for keeping this type of body going and hopefully sending a signal to Oregonians and other states how we feel about the issues. So, I'm glad to take any questions. But
okay. Any questions?
No.
Thank you very much. My intention on this is if this isn't the right structure going forward, I think in terms of you take some time, think about the appropriate structure on this. And let's do it right, that we have a a continuing body that is striving to push government, the private sector, looking for the competitive advantage that Oregon has in this, and striving for ways for us to exploit that to the advantage of our citizens, from a economic standpoint, from a lifestyle standpoint, in terms of and trying to find innovative ways to do this. Initially, when we did the Internet Commission, I purposely wanted it to end because I wanted to report out before the legislature showed up in town, because too many times we have reports and, you know, it'll show up in the middle of March, it's past the drafting deadline, it's an inch thick, and we can't do anything about it, and none of us, we're all too busy to read it. Mm-hmm. We throw it over our shoulder after we smile at the person who handed it to us, and nothing ever happens about it. And so, I mean, this way we can have the debate. It's an engaging debate in terms of talking about how the future of Oregon can be affected by this. And maybe it needs to be not as Internet Commission. Maybe it needs to be a little bit broader in terms of bringing in more concepts, in terms of Jim Johnson, when we had the update in terms of the last time, in terms of broadening sort of this aspect, but bringing all these different elements together in terms of as this area and space gels. So in terms of maybe we can take some time to be thinking about this in terms of how we want to formulate an approach going forward, that we sort of capture the right elements, that we don't get too broad of a mission that we lose focus and direction, but yet that we have a purpose going forward in sort of a visionary group that is always trying to set the goalposts a little bit farther out for us to try to achieve. And so I figure if we suggest we hit half of what we suggested, we can then declare success.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I think that it is very important that you have an independent body that answers to the legislature, that can continue this important work. And the sad thing about even having this conversation today, when the co-chairs' budgets have just come out and things look so grim in terms of the budget process, is that perhaps it would be fruitful to have a discussion of still keeping the goal of having this, but reducing the size of the commission, and that might have a substantial good effect on the fiscal statement. I would love to see maybe not 15 members if we can't afford that right now, but maybe 7 or 9 members. Could we have a fiscal statement created?
I don't think in terms of the fiscal statement, it relates to the size of I don't think we paid per diem. So I think it would be.
It was voluntary. Yeah. You've got 4 legislators with the per diem, but that's de minimis. Why is
it's staffing?
Staffing.
So we get everything recorded properly. So in terms of, I think in terms of matter what rate, that's sort of the cost. But as suggests in terms of ways that we can try to reduce that. But I'm confident in terms of as we go forward here that if we come with the right structure, we'll find the right dollars to do this. In the private sector, it's important to them. They were very generous and helped, you know, in the last go around, in terms of from time and effort and money. And I think
so perhaps they'll come to the rescue again and keep this thing going, because it is something that we need to have in the state.
I think in terms of we can create a public-private participation going forward, because it's in everybody's best interest to have this keep going.
Okay. With that, my intention as well on this one is to try to work this up so that by the end of February, we move this by the end of February.
And, so as we go, I'll be talking to those who want to participate in this and crafting a solution as we figure out. And that way, in the meantime, we'll also figure out how to pay for it. So.
Okay. You have money in your pocket, do you?
Well, I don't know. We'll find it. Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2470? Hearing and seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2470. And let's open a work session. And we have possible introduction of bills. And we've got LC 2841.
Where are we? Wait a minute. Last page. Oh, thank you. Okay. I was looking for it, but it wasn't in there.
You just want to move to?
Yes. I'm moving this way to.
You want to move to introduce the committee bill?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move that we introduce LC 2841 as a committee bill.
Representative Lowe moves that we introduce LC 2841 as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered.
With a committee of two, it's sort of
there we go.
Hard to have discussions and objections.
Amongst ourselves, yeah.
And what do you think of this one, huh?
And with that, Mark, what do we have coming up next? We do have a meeting next Tuesday.
The next meeting, Chair Hill, will be on Thursday.
Thursday, okay. So we got.
I guess I do have a question about this. Is there a fiscal impact, do you think? Will there be a fiscal impact statement that's going to accompany this? It occurs to me that there may well be, and it might.
No?
No, it's in your stream.
Yeah, we'll deal with it. Also, on the way to the inside.
Appreciate that.
So, okay. Then, without further ado, without objection, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
I kind of.